It's Friday, and that means the 52nd edition of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. That means it's a year. And it also means some time for reflection on this year before we get into what I'm thinking about, talking about today, which is healing. But just a personal reflection before I ask you to do your own personal reflection. Obviously, it's been quite a year, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about what we do here, because you responded to someone who wrote in last week, and I liked it. You said, let's not lose sight of the fact of what my father and I are trying to do, which is to lower the temperature, agree much of the time, but disagree, sometimes strongly disagree, but quietly, and then we walk away loving each other and respecting each other. And I like that. And I want that to be, as we enter a new year, the continuing theme of this podcast and the continuing theme of our lives. And it just hit me about your grandfather, my father, a grocer from Lebanon. He died when I was just short of 13 years of age. And one of the things that stood out were so many people who came to his wake and to his funeral and who said he was generous, he was kind. During the Depression, he lent us groceries, knowing full well what the word lent meant. He wasn't ever going to get paid. And that he was a decent and an honorable man. He was honest. And not one of them said, you know, he was right on all the issues. I agreed with everything he said. I thought, this is a good time to think about our lives and what we want to be. And what I'd much rather be is like my father, known for kindness, generosity, integrity, honesty, those sorts of things. It doesn't matter where I stand on the issues. I'm going to stand on them. But nobody has to agree with me all the time.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that's it. I think that everybody should think like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
First, going back to the comment, that's up on our YouTube channel. We got a lot of comments from last week, and on both sides,
yeah,
people critical,
mm-hmm,
and don't come to our show looking for your view to be vindicated. That's not why we do this. I knew going into this, because you and I have had disagreements over many years. I knew going into this that the backdrop was civil discourse.
Mm-hmm.
People are really losing the art of conversation. People are really losing the inability to listen. They seek validation. They get uncomfortable when they hear the opposite of their opinion. Tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
The loss of empathy. I've been thinking a lot about this week, about empathy, and right now I fear that it's going down the tube from both sides, not just from one side, from both sides. Empathy to me is not sympathy. A lot of people conflate empathy and sympathy. Sympathy is feeling sorry for somebody. It's saying, I'm sorry for your pain. That's different from empathy. Empathy, to me, is best defined as the old Native American saying of walk a day in another man's or a woman's moccasins. Place yourself. I think we need to do that. If you're a Democrat, I think right now you need to be thinking about the 70 million, 75, whatever it is, 74 million people who voted differently than you did, and why they did. walk a day in their shoes, walk a day in their moccasins, to the 74 million people who voted for Trump, think about the 75 or 80 million plus people that voted for Biden, why they did it. This goes back to what kind of what you were saying with Jiddu, grandfather, my Jiddu, who I never met, but I felt like I knew him. He was kind of a saint in our family.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody I've always looked up to, somebody I've always tried to keep in my heart based on the stories I've heard. And you're absolutely right. He's not remembered for his political stances. He's remembered for his actions.
Mm-hmm.
Honesty, wisdom, generosity. How many cousins and uncles and people say, he always made me feel at home?
Mm.
Why can't we do that for other people? Why can't we do that for people who think differently? I mean, it's one thing if you're a member of the Klan, get the hell away from me, right? If you're a member of some crazy left-wing, you know, organization that wants to see blood on the streets, get the hell away from me. But that's not millions of people. That is not millions of people.
There's so many acts of kindness out there. Everything from the flyer that's on the cork board or the utility pole that there's a spaghetti dinner or a fish fry on behalf of a little child with leukemia, or the GoFundMe pages on behalf of people who've suffered a loss of some sort. So many acts of kindness like that that need to really be highlighted so that we remember that when you walk into a Legion Hall or a church basement, that it doesn't matter what the bumper sticker is on the car or truck of the people who are there. That's the least important thing. You know, politics is a segment of our lives. It's not a defining issue in our lives. It's become defining, and you see what happens. And it's not good.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. I know you've been devoting a lot of time. You know, I've devoted a lot of time healing. I have some thoughts, but what are you thinking? I mean, this is not simply a divide, a chasm. This is a tipping point right now, politically. It's very dangerous. Right at this moment, it's very dangerous. We don't know what next week is going to bring. Looks like we're prepared for next week, but that's not the point. The point is that it's on our minds, and it kind of scares the bejesus out of us. How do we begin that process of healing our divisions?
I can only think of one thing right now in the immediate. You know, I maybe as the conversation goes on, maybe we can talk about policy and what politicians need to do. But I think the immediate thing is what I mentioned a few minutes ago, that if I'm a Biden voter,
mm-hmm.
do I really think that 70 million or tens of millions of people are disgusting human beings? If I'm a Trump supporter, do I really think that tens of millions of people on the other side are vile, disgusting human beings? Just because you vote for it starts right there. It starts as looking at the rank and file. It's one thing to hold your contempt and your distrust, not contempt, your distrust for the actual people in power. That's one thing. I mean, they do that in countries all around the world where people, you know, European countries, Latin American countries. I know because I've lived in a European country for 2 years. They don't take their politicians seriously.
Mm-hmm.
They just assume that they're up to no good,
mm-hmm.
on both sides. But here, what's happening is we're becoming so excited and being drawn in to that tribalism where the empathy is gone for the other. And when the empathy is gone, you pretty much stop seeing the other as a human being, mm-hmm. right? So that's the first step, is ask yourself, is the other side, the rank and file, are they true? Are most of them truly vile, disgusting people? Or is that more or less the truth for a tiny sliver in both camps? So the next thing to do is to reconnect. Who are those family members that you stopped talking to? Who are those friends that you defriended? What can you agree on? Don't talk about what you know you disagree on.
Yeah.
What can you agree on? We were on a call yesterday, and without getting into what the nature of the call was, the tendency in the conversation, as I heard it, was focusing so much on how news is shaping our views, and while that's true, I asked the question, have our personal lives really been hijacked by the left and the right? All aspects of our personal lives, whether that's congregating in a church, whether that's going to the post office or going fishing, are all those things now boiling down to where you stand politically? So that's my first step. What do you think about that? And more importantly, then where do you go from there? Is it even attainable?
Yes. Yeah, you know, we've had these peaks and valleys, you know, throughout our history. We've had our nativist moments, our hate moments. Sometimes they're in the ascendancy, and at other times we've bonded and banded together. You know, after Jack Kennedy was assassinated, after 9/11. During some more prosperous times, always the issue of race that rears its ugly head, and yet some progress continues to be made, but racism still rears its ugly head. So, you know, here in this community, and we're in the Utica, New York community, very proud of this community. It's not perfect, but it's a good one. And one of the things that we've actually done very well is absorbed immigrants from a variety of countries and absorbed refugees from a variety of countries. And we've actually done some polling that shows that the community in general, 2 out of 3, think that it's a very positive thing for the community. I don't see any active hate groups. I don't see any active rejectionists who are anti-refugee or anti the source of the countries of our refugees. And incidentally, they're from everywhere, you know, from Southeast Asia to East Asia to Africa to you know, the Balkans and so on. And I remember something that started about 25 years ago in this community. It's kind of a community bridging project launched by places of worship, but small groups would gather in church basements or in people's living rooms, diverse groups, diverse racially and diverse ideologically. People just talked to each other. That whole process of undehumanizing the other. It's hard to hate somebody that you see, you know, that you feel that there's a humanity. It's a whole lot easier to dehumanize caricatures. And I loved that project, participated somewhat, your mom and I, in some of those conversations, found them to be exhilarating. And I'm not going to say that they changed the world, but I am going to say that they provided a cushion so that people who really could not be involved directly at least had an understanding that there's a cushion, a foundation in this community that is welcoming, is empathic. I think that we need a nationwide network of small conversations throughout the country. I think that it should be presidential. No budget except for coffee and cookies, but it it should involve the religious leaders and rights leaders, business and civic leaders. It should be multiracial and multiethnic, but at the same time, bipartisan or nonpartisan. And that these conversations for which there should be questions that people answer, but open-ended kinds of questions, launch a conversation, the topic and the content important, but much more important is the empathy and relationships that come out of those conversations. All of which start from the bottom up, toning things down and mm-hmm. getting people to know each other better.
Yeah, I think it would have to start first from and, you know, usually I'm against top down, but in this regard, because the immediate reaction following the events last week, you know, from the top down, I thought was inherently divisive. So I think it has to start with the Biden presidency, where they need to, and you've already kind of just said this, but just to clarify a little bit more, have all kinds of personalities. You know, members of the political opposition, although we wouldn't call it that because that's not a good conversation starter, right? I think it has to go to the Silicon Valley CEOs too. I mean, what's happening with Parler, what Twitter is doing and what Facebook is doing is more or less just mirroring this division. So I think they need to reconsider that. I mean, I think they would only enhance their brand equity by reaching out and saying, you know what? If we continue down this path, we're just going to be siloed. Maybe there'll be conflict. Maybe it'll be like Bloody Kansas, right? I'm not going to say Civil War, but let's try something different. So I think it has to start with them. And then, you know, at the same time, the bottom-up approach can happen. But if we see the signal from the leadership, I think that sends a more powerful message.
I agree. I agree on Silicon Valley as well. They're part of the problem. And the only way they know to fight the problem is to self-censor. And, you know, I do agree with you. As really troublesome as some of these social media, Parler and even some of the mainstream can be, censorship really isn't the answer. There's got to be an opportunity to make money by building bridges with people, a way of drawing them together. I mean, I go back, I'm just talking limited now professionally, where we started to do some work for some pretty giant companies, and it was kind of a side note. It was called CSR. We're talking 25 years ago. Corporate social responsibility. Oh, by the way, we'd like to test if this is the sort of thing that can work for our company and make us good corporate citizens. It was all very, very new. And then it blossomed into something that really defines the brand of many major companies, even more so than the product or the service that they're starting to, that they continue to sell. Or the new products that they lay out, is win trust and win loyalty by what you do to make your world a better place. And from there, we'll buy your product. You're a good company. You're composed of good people. And so that's where I think that something like this, national conversations, a large network of many local conversations, and less the content and more the relationship building.
But really, you know, because it would be interesting how that would be rolled out. But just to emphasize again strongly that it has to first and foremost be modeled.
Absolutely.
It demonstrated to the public. I mean, like, you know, a nationwide Zoom call mm-hmm. between members. And maybe don't even try and get Biden and Trump involved, but members of the Biden people, members of the RNC, Trump's camp. You know, Ron Paul was recently banned. Bring in the libertarians. Bring in the Greens. Show to us how we need to communicate. Because if it can't be done, and if it fails on the first attempt, then we know where this is going.
Caveat. But we're not going to start by defining people by their politics and ideology. We're going to go to our tribes.
I more or less just meant the representation of differing cultures and opinions and worldviews.
Okay, let's shift. Yeah. Somewhat related. We have an inauguration coming up, believe it or not. It's next Thursday, right? The 13th? Next Wednesday. You've got 5 minutes with Joe Biden in terms of laying out a priority or two. What would you tell him?
Healing.
Mm-hmm.
Drop the terminology of domestic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
That's only going to send the signal that tens of millions of people are terrorists. I know people are going to disagree with that, but I mean, we're really on the brink.
Mm-hmm.
So no terminology, sweeping terminology. Those who did illegal things, you know, those who shattered the windows and whatever else, yeah, those people need to be arrested. But don't send the signal and have sweeping language that basically encompasses everybody that was at that rally is an insurrectionist. I would say that would be a major step. That alone mm-hmm. would be a major step. I don't know how you do that after the language was already thrown out there, but I would say that would be a good start. What would you say is the next thing?
I would say the first thing is stick with the program. First of all, I like the fact that we have a 78-year-old with a lot of experience who has built bridges in his lifetime and who has the personality and the credibility to talk to diverse people, both among voters and among leaders. But stick with the program. He's defined an aggressive attack on the coronavirus. He's defined an aggressive program for, yes, spending money, but as Franklin Roosevelt talked about, priming the pump, getting money in people's hands to be spent and to get the economy pumping again. I like that. I like an infrastructure bill. I like rejoining the Paris Accord. I like Joe Biden, and I like the program that he's on. And just stick with the program and don't utter the two words President Trump. And I think he's doing that now. I think it's time for him to look forward, let other people take care of the past.
I would caution him on the money creation.
Mm-hmm.
Trump already opened that door with $2 or $3 trillion in one day and created into existence. Biden's probably going to continue that, but I would very much caution him that be careful of going down that road. I know of not one single country in human history. Please tell me if I'm wrong, But, you know, I mean, I'm even going back to before the Romans, that anybody that has gone down that road generally can't control it, and they lose control, and there are destructive effects. I understand at the same time that, you know, you would make the point, you could make the point that if he doesn't do anything, right, it's a catch-22. But that nations have proven themselves, especially in the 20th century, that going down that road has disastrous effects. I think the classic case of that is Weimar Germany. I wrote about this in the second issue of the Main Street, K Street Intelligencer, if we could get that image right there of the cover so everybody could see what I'm talking about here. The opening vignette actually made the case that what's happening now can, in some ways, maybe many ways, parallel Weimar Germany. So study that case study of Germany in the 20s, and the left-wing radical groups, the right-wing radical groups running amok, the currency creation, trillions of units of currency, and what that does to rip apart the social fabric. I would say keep that case study in mind.
Well, you know what I like about this week, besides the fact that we've had a nice discussion again, is if you'll recall last week where you had the last word. It's my turn.
Yeah.
I got the last word. Be cautious and know your history. Absolutely. The time now is for empathy. There are people who can't pay their bills. There are people who have no prospects for paying their bills. That means that there are landlords and banks that collect rents and mortgages, small businesses. The ripple effect is enormous. There are times when you have to spend money and prime the pump, and this is clearly one of those times, and this is the message to be sent. This is tantamount to the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and I think that's what we're looking for right now. In my book, FDR was the greatest president of the 20th century, and now it's Joe Biden's turn, and we'll see if he can get the economy rolling again. His Democratic predecessor did, with controversial moves, but he got the economy growing and record growing by priming the pump. Now I think the action is needed, and more aggressively. And there we go.
You have the last word.
I got the last word of the year.
Were you waiting for that after last week?
I've been rehearsing. Have a good week. Write to us. Say nice things.